Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from Edvest and You, a loan product of the NEEF Network, a local nonprofit agency providing college student loans and student loan refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our annual summer book show on The Exchange, and given the current national reflection about racism in America, we'll focus this summer tradition on The Exchange on books by diverse authors. We'll look back at classics like The Autobiography of Malcolm X or The Color Purple. We'll learn about new authors whose work might have been overlooked if not for current activism. And as always, any book that comes up this hour, along with our guests' recommendations, we'll put on our website after the show, which you can use as your summer reading list if you'd like. It's nhpr.org/exchange. And listeners, you can join us now with your questions and recommendations. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or you can give us a call. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter, Benjamin Paisley, general manager at The Bookery in Manchester, and Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. Welcome, all of you. And Michael, I'll start with you. Before we get into all our books, how are you all operating at your bookstores, given the ongoing pandemic, given shifts in what's allowed by state government in terms of retail? And Michael, you go first. Tell us how it's going.
It's been very weird for the last few months. We closed the store, to the pandemic back in mid-March. And every time we've made a change, it's been scary, including changes that go more towards opening up. So, you know, we were doing a lot of shipping and then curbside pickup. And now finally, we've been, for the last few weeks, been doing appointment shopping. And we're going to be opening to the public in a limited way on July 7th, but we're always ready to scale that back, if the news gets bad. So it's just a weird time. It does tend to focus the mind, I have to say.
Yeah, I bet. And you have my sympathy. So appointment shopping. And so people just came in and said, I want to look around. I can't tell you exactly what I want, Michael, but I want to come and browse. Is that how that worked?
Well, no, we actually put up a page on our website for people to make appointments, and we gave them space to list the kinds of things that they wanted our booksellers to be able to talk to them about. And most people didn't put anything. They did just want to come in and shop, or they would come in with their own lists and didn't necessarily need us to pitch in. But it's a process, and people would come in, and if they wanted us to be ready with recommendations, we were ready.
Sure. So in July, you're opening up to limited capacity. Is that what I understand, Michael?
Well, we're going to be open from 10 to 4 Tuesday through Saturday and to the public. And we're going to have, limits on how many people can be in the store at one time. And we're going to have certain requirements, like people will have to wear masks. And, because that's just the science, there's no argument there. And, so we're just going to try that out and be just ready to scale it back if we have to.
Ben, how about you? What are your operations like these days, and how is that different from before?
They're very similar, actually, but it's been weird as well, but fun at the same time. And I'll explain why. So it's a little different, as in everything has been grab and go, curbside, interaction online and everything like that. But the fun part of it has been what we've done recently is our social media. That's been the most fun part about it. And it's really cool to have to be connecting with our community in such a way we have been. And that's like the funnest part of what we've been doing. And that's the change that I think is really going to stay.
Wow, that's really interesting. Tell me a little bit more about that, Benjamin. They always say like necessity is the mother of invention, right? So how did you sort of make your use of social media better during this time, to the point where you said it was fun?
We wanted to try to connect. We wanted to take this time to connect with our community, because in the past, our social media wasn't the best, or we weren't like too focused on it. But at this time, we figured that a lot of people would be consuming at this point in time. So why not try to connect with them on that way? So we started off by reading every morning. I would read books, our children books every morning. And that was a great way of connecting. And then we started doing our social media, TikTok, having fun, showing people, like trying to make people laugh throughout their day, because we know it's hard to be home every single day. And it kind of just worked for us.
Wow. So you would go on your social media and read children's books?
Correct. We would do story time every morning. We started, I think, late March, and we did it every day until, I want to say, like, late April or May. Because once the first wave of people started going back to work, it kind of died down. People were going back to work. They weren't too in tune anymore, but we read it every morning.
Wow. And Michael told us how he is, did appointment only shopping and is getting ready to invite the public back in a limited way. How about you, Benjamin? Where are you at in this sort of slow reopening process?
So we have similar ideas as well. We plan on opening July 14th to limited capacity as well. We'll be monitoring the store, making sure it doesn't get too packed. People will be required to wear masks at all times, unless you're under the age of 2, of course. And like you said, that's science. You can't really debate that. So yeah, we have some pretty cool plans to open.
Well, Dan Chartrand, how about you? How is your store operating differently with social distancing still recommended? I remember being in your store, Dan. It's small in parts, so you don't have the opportunity like the grocery stores have to massively widen the aisles. So how are you figuring this out, Dan?
Well, we closed on March 16th, like the other two stores. And we were doing about 70% of our normal business in our non-public facing mode, which was orders over the phone and over our website. And then we were doing curbside pickup.
And
we also
offered
free shipping for the remainder of the We also offered free shipping for the remainder of the pandemic. We actually went to appointment shopping for 2 weeks starting at the end of May. And then we reopened to the public on June 19th. So we reopened almost 2 weeks ago now. Everything, it feels very similar to the way it was before. But of course, everyone's in masks. There's a limit to how many people can come in the store. And we found our community to be very respectful. Our guiding principle in all of this is to remain on mission. And the mission of the bookstore is to build a diverse and vibrant community around the written word. And we're just doing that in whatever way we can, given the circumstances. So we are on mission, and our community has really rallied to our side.
So Dan, you opened up a little bit earlier than our other two guests in mid-June. How's the customer traffic? Are people nervous about sort of hanging out in a bookstore, or are they eager to come and browse your shelves?
The customer traffic initially was quite strong, much stronger than normal.
Oh, wow.
Now that we've been open a few weeks, I think it feels very normal in the store, with, of course, the only differences being masks, hand sanitizer, plexiglass on the counters, all the recommended, and we're doing social distancing, a max of 15 people in the store at any one time. But that's really not an issue for us, because we rarely have that many people in the store. It's really a store with a small town feel. And Exeter has this very vibrant downtown and yet remains very small town and intimate. So we have some advantages perhaps that stores in larger markets, major metropolitan areas, don't have.
Well, one last question about this for all of you, and then I do want to jump into the books, because there's so much to talk about there. But Benjamin, I'm going to start with you on this. Many business people that I've talked to over the past 3 months say some of the changes they've had to make, again, out of necessity, as you talked about, were actually good ideas, and they're going to stick with it even after this whole, awful pandemic is over. How about you, Benjamin? What practices are you going to stick with no matter what?
So I believe we're going to stick with our online ordering and our grab and go and curbside delivery, because it gives people the option that if they don't want to come in, if they feel like they don't want to come in and actually be around other people, they can still have that option. So I think that would be a good thing to keep. And we're definitely going to keep our social media going. We're going to try to integrate it more heavily as we get more of our employees back in, and maybe try some cool creations to maybe do with the community as well. But we definitely want to keep our grab and go and beef up our social media. Oh, and lastly, we want to keep our online service. We're trying to beef that up as well too. We're trying to make it to where people can have a better interaction with our online, since we're drawing so many people from our social media, have a better online experience than we did in the past. So we're trying to keep all of our social media really prevalent.
Interesting. Going forward. So make it super easy, Benjamin, to buy a book online, just as easy as it is on Amazon.
Well, maybe not that easy, but get to that stage. But yes, hopefully one day, yes.
How about you, Michael? Are there changes that you have made at Gibson's that you're thinking now, okay, this is a good idea, I'm gonna stick with this?
Well, the online ordering is certainly something that we want to continue. All the books are shoppable on many bookstores' websites, and to get customers to shift their shopping from the online giants to the independent stores would be a great outcome for a pandemic, and there aren't going to be that many great outcomes, so we have to hope for at least one or two. And another thing that's happened is, we're not able to have in-person events at the store anymore during the pandemic, and a lot of that has gone online with Zoom events and just virtual events of all kinds. And that's something to explore even in the future. If you can't bring in an author from far away because the economics don't work, a Zoom event might be something to keep in mind. So that's something that's worth exploring after the pandemic is over as well.
I had forgotten about that, Michael. During the New Hampshire primary, for example, you kind of got a name for yourself in town for hosting candidates and hosting sort of political authors, and your store would be packed with people who came to hear these authors and candidates. So that's...
Yeah, all three of the stores on this call did that. And that's just not possible right now. You can't really gather people together. In the past, everything we did was to help get people into the physical store.
Right.
And that focus has changed. So that's just going to be an interesting mix moving forward.
That's really interesting. Dan Chartrand, what about you? Changes you've had to make because of the pandemic that you are going to keep?
Similar to the other two stores, we are going to keep all the elements of our non-public facing mode in place. So we're going to continue to take orders over the web and over the phone. We're going to continue to deliver those orders in a contactless way, either via curbside pickup or home delivery or free shipping via U.S. Postal Service. So we think that leaving that in place is not only great customer service, but it's also a great business move, because it's entirely possible that we're going to have to go back into non-public facing mode at some point in the future, while this pandemic works its way through.
Wow. Well, let's switch to the books, gentlemen. And again, I want to remind our listeners that you can join us by email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And today in The Exchange, for our annual summer book show, we are focusing this summer tradition on The Exchange on books by diverse authors. And we want to hear from you. Fiction, nonfiction, what are you curious about? What's on your reading list? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter, Benjamin Paisley, general manager at The Bookery in Manchester, and Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. And Benjamin, I want to start with you. In terms of anti-racism resources, what are the two or three titles, Benjamin, that you are just having a hard time keeping in stock?
The titles we are having insanely hard time keeping on those shows are How to Be Anti-Racist, White Fragility, and Stamped. Those continue to fly off the shelves, even when as soon as we'll make a post about it, like, oh, we just got more books in, immediately they sell out. I think the publishers had to republish the books numerous times, so they're hard to stay in stock, but it's also awesome to see that these books have been selling and how much they've been selling, because that means that it's kind of like the world is on one book club right now. We're all reading kind of the same book, so we're all on the same page. We're all trying to understand the same exact thing. So I think that's really cool that these specific books have been flying off the shelves as much. But yeah, those are the few books that we can't keep in stock.
Wow, that's a good problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah, especially the books that are selling.
Michael Herman, the books that Benjamin mentioned, White Fragility, How to Be an Anti-Racist, Stamped. There's two others that seem to be on everybody's list, Me and White Supremacy, So You Want to Talk About Race. these were on your list too, Michael. What is it about these books, Michael, in particular, that makes them just, like Benjamin told us, you can't keep them in stock?
Well, it's a weird time. And, you know, the outrage over, you know, violence against Black people and people of color and Indigenous people in this country has been going on for 400 years. And it's like, it's a wake up call. We've just been hitting the snooze button for 400 years. And maybe now it's different. And, you know, the people just want to read about it. I remember after 9/11, everybody suddenly wanted to figure out what was going on. And they would buy books about, you know, Afghanistan and Islam and the Middle East. And all of a sudden, they were trying to educate themselves. And I think a similar thing is happening here. And I hope it continues.
Dan, what do you think? Again, and I'm going to get, you know, different books too from you guys. But what do you think, Dan? These four that I just mentioned and that Benjamin listed have been just selling like crazy. What is it about these books in particular that is attracting people so much?
Well, I think what Michael said is right on. This is a time when people are trying to raise their awareness, their self-awareness about these issues that have really been with our country since 1619. And from that self-awareness, you know, that they're garnering by reading these books, they're trying to sort of do an inventory and become accountable. And from that accountability, I think will spring action. So again, I think all these stores are right on mission by selling these books and providing them to their patrons who are demanding them. There is a need for self-awareness around these issues. And that self-awareness, again, leads to accountability, and then it leads to action, hopefully. So we're right on mission. We're building a diverse and vibrant community. And we don't offer ourselves as experts on this. We just say these are the books that others are reading, and you may want to check them out yourselves.
And Dan, are you having as much difficulty as Benjamin in literally keeping these in stock?
There have been stock outages, definitely, as the publishers try to print books. The pandemic is definitely creating issues with the supply chain. And
that's interesting.
The reason these are out of stock. So when you have a lot of books all at once in demand, there's only so much printing capacity normally. And then the pandemic actually squeezes that even further because those printers have to social distance in their printing plants. So it just takes a little longer, but the publishers have been remarkable in getting these books back into the pipeline and into the hands of these readers who want to raise their awareness.
Wow, that's really interesting. I hadn't even thought about what you just said, Dan, that the actual physical printers have to, you know, operate under some of the same restrictions you guys are operating under, maybe staggered shifts or 6 feet apart. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, not just the printers, but also the whole distribution channel. So we rely on publishers' warehouses and wholesalers' warehouses, and those are all being socially distanced as well, so that the whole shipping process slows down as well. So there's good reasons for these stock outages in addition to the normal outages we'd have with this kind of demand. But again, the publishers, the distribution channel, they've been valiant in getting these books into the hands of booksellers and readers.
Wow, I had not even thought about that. So those are some of the titles that, again, I have seen on every single list. White Fragility, How to Be an Anti-Racist, Me and White Supremacy, So You Want to Talk About Race, Stamped. Other bestsellers in terms of anti-racism resources, Benjamin, that maybe you're not having a hard time getting them in stock, but they're important and you think listeners should know about them.
Yes, so we had a few. Actually, we have Hitting a Straight Lick with a Crooked Stick by Zora Neale Hurston, The Native Son by Richard Wright, and then The Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. Those are a few books that we find that are just as good as read as those are.
Wow, and The Invisible Man, that's a classic, right, Benjamin?
Yes.
Wow. Michael, how about you? You had a long list of anti-racism resources in addition to these titles that, again, are, you know, selling like hotcakes, so to speak.
Yeah, well, there's you know, there's a lot of books out there. Some of them have been famous for a long time. Some of them have been somewhat overlooked. And I think that, you know, anti-racism instead of, you know, non-racism is a very valuable frame right now, because I think that, Kendi's argument in Stamped and How to Be an Anti-Racist is that, you know, we're steeped in racism in our culture, and instead of denying it, we just need to recognize it and work with it and move forward. So, I mean, some of the older titles that are classics, you know, a lot of things by Toni Morrison. Beloved is one of my favorite novels. It came out, I think, like 33 years ago, I guess, won the Pulitzer Prize. And it's about, it's the life of a young woman named Setha, whose baby was killed. And when slavers were trying to capture her, and you know, it's very literary, very much of a ghost story in a lot of ways. Very powerful novel, and it's having a resurgence right now.
Yeah, well, you make me feel old, Michael, because I remember reading it when it first came out.
Same.
So, how about you, Dan? You know, in addition to the ones again that are selling really, really well, what other anti-racism books are you recommending at your store?
Well, two of my personal favorites are Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me, which is a letter to his son about racism in the United States. And as Michael said, how it's just steeped in our culture and in our society. That's a gorgeous, gorgeously written, brilliant book that is a very personal story. So that's wonderful. A book that I read when I was, I think, 12 years old or 13 years old, in the early 70s, was the autobiography of Malcolm X as told to Alex Haley. As a young man growing up in a very sort of close-knit, closed-off Catholic community in St. Paul, Minnesota, to read this book of Malcolm X's, it was quite mind-blowing and really raised my awareness to, at a very young age, to, and I wouldn't have put it this way at the time, but it really raised my awareness to how much privilege I had and how much of a head start I had as a white person in this society over people of color and Black people.
You know, Ben, I know we have to let you go, and we're going to bring on your colleague, Jasmine, to talk more about some of the books that you guys are selling well. But I did want to ask you one last question, Benjamin. Just, you know, the bookery is relatively new. It's a relatively new bookstore. And here you are, kind of making a go of it in a pandemic, in a time of national upheaval about racism. What's this been like for you, Benjamin?
It's been really crazy. It's been very up and down emotionally. I've definitely had my highest highs here and my lowest lows. And what I mean by my highest highs is that how the community here in Manchester has accepted me, not just as a Black person, but as a person in general, with open arms. They see me, they recognize me from place to place. They're like, oh, you're the guy that works at the bookery. You're the guy that works. Like, you're on TikTok all the time. I'm like, yeah. And then also in this time right now, as we're in now, it kind of hit me in a low, low time because a lot of people had questions. And being that person that is readily available to a lot of people and also who fits the description of the people who are being disenfranchised, just as not as much or as much as other people, is a little hurting. And it was mentally draining because they reached out to me like, how can I help? Or can you tell me this? Can you tell me that? And it really put me into a spot in my life I haven't been to in a long time, is because I had to relive a lot of that to be able to explain it to certain people. But it's been brought with love, caring, understanding, of course, a lot of empathy, and people are just genuinely wondering how they can help. But it's definitely been had a toll on me from time to time.
Well, Benjamin, good luck to you. And I really appreciate you being with us.
Oh, of course. And thank you for having me.
All right. We'll talk to you again.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
That's Benjamin Paisley, general manager of the Bookery in Manchester. And coming up, some fiction for your summer book list. And we'll get more recommendations. We'll really start diving into some of the titles. Also, we've got lots of recommendations from our listeners. That is great. You can send in your favorites or your questions by email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Since the coronavirus pandemic began, we have heard from so many of you that in an uncertain world, listening to NPR and this station is familiar. That public radio is a constant, even a comfort. The feeling is mutual. We are so grateful that you are here with us. You make the public radio community even stronger when you become a sustaining member of this station. Here's how.
Become a sustaining member of NHPR for just $10 a month at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's our annual summer book show on The Exchange. And given the current national reckoning about racism in America, we're focusing on books by diverse authors this hour. And as always, any book that comes up, along with our booksellers' recommendations, will be on our website a little bit later today. So check it out at nhpr.org/exchange. Once again, nhpr.org/exchange. It's a great resource for your summer reading list. Our guests are Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter, Michael Harmon, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, and with us now is Jasmine Brooks, assistant manager of the Bookery in Manchester. And Jasmine, welcome. It's really great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and again, I want to remind listeners that they can join us with their recommendations at exchange@nhpr.org. Send them in by email. We've got a bunch coming in already. You can also use Facebook, or you can call in at 1-800-892-6477. And Jasmine, I know you were listening earlier while we were talking with your colleague Benjamin. In addition to the anti-racism titles that we talked about before, the ones that Benjamin told us are really selling, like White Fragility and How to Be an Anti-Racist, what other new nonfiction books, Jasmine, are you recommending that would help listeners better understand this moment that we're in?
Well, a new book that just came out was The Stony Road by Henry Louis Gates Jr. This one caught my eye when it first came in, and it's the subtitle is Reconstruction, White Supremacy, and the Rise of Jim Crow. It's a really in-depth history of how we got to where we are with racism in America.
The Stony Road. And I have one that I wanted to ask you about, Jasmine, that was on your list and that I've seen but haven't picked up yet. Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? This is a great title, and I'm sure there are a lot of parents who've gotten that question from their kids. So who is this book aimed at, Jasmine? And give us a little preview, please.
Well, I think this book is aimed at, you know, the general public. It's about why people self-segregate in society in general. And of course, you see that in public schools a lot, where the black kids would sit with the black kids, white kids sit with the white kids. And it's kind of talking about why that happens and how we can fix that in our society and blend together, come together and be the human race together.
And there's another one that caught my eye, Jasmine, on your list, When They Call You a Terrorist. What's that one about?
That one is, it's actually a Black Lives memoir by Patrice Khan Coulores. It talks about how the Black Lives Matter movement started several years ago and what it meant to the people and how that morphed into such a big movement around, well, the world now at this point.
So it's about the whole way that the Black Lives Matter movement started.
Yeah, and it's also the personal experiences of the people who started it, like talking about what made them kind of push them to start this movement and their experiences once they did start it, the backlash, the positive stuff that they saw.
The backlash meaning they were called terrorists, is that right, Jasmine?
Yes, exactly. There was a lot of backlash when the movement began because, you know, people feel threatened when they are, you know, called out, basically.
Well, and as I've been saying, all of your recommendations, Michael's and Dan's, will be put on our website a little bit later today. It's really a great resource for people. But before we go to our listeners, Jasmine, other books, again, on this, in this area of sort of getting educated, anti-racism resources that you really want to make sure our listeners know about, Jasmine, that haven't been mentioned yet?
One popular book that we've had customers actually asking for regularly is The Color of Law. And it's it highlights how our own government has created laws and segregation, not just in the past, but still in the present, to keep, you know, minority groups down, and laws that prevent them from being able to rise themselves up.
The Color of Law, that's the name of it.
Yes, and that is by Richard Rothstein.
Okay. I want to go to some recommendations from our listeners and ask all of you what you think. But before we do, Dan Chartrand, other nonfiction books, again, in this category that your booksellers are recommending. We've put a lot of titles out there, but are there any others, Dan, that you think are important?
Yeah, there's four that we've highlighted in addition to the ones that are selling the best. There's a new book by Stacey Abrams called Our Time Is Now. She ran for governor of Georgia last year and barely lost. There's also a book by Eddie S. Glaude Jr. called Democracy in Black, How Race Still Enslaves the American Soul. And then two staff favorites are a book by Morgan Jenkins called This Will Be My Undoing. She's an absolutely brilliant writer. And in this collection, she really lays bare what it has been like to grow up and be a Black woman. She doesn't hold back at all. It really feels like she is giving her readers this gift of her honest experience for her white readers. And then there's another book by Cheryl Cashin called Loving, Interracial in America and the Threat to White Supremacy.
We lost you a little bit there, Dan. It's called Loving, Interracial Relationships in America. Is that what you said?
Interracial Intimacy in America and the Threat to White Supremacy. And it kind of takes the Loving v. Loving case that the Supreme Court decided.
Right.
And it looks at that in particular, but it also looks at the history of sort of the way in which the concepts of Blackness and whiteness were used basically to further an economic system of slavery. And we're still struggling with that today.
Okay. Yes. And that, for listeners, Dan, who aren't familiar with that case, that was a Supreme Court case in Virginia a long time ago, an interracial couple. And in Virginia, they were not allowed to marry. So that's what that case is all about. Right, Dan?
And then the Supreme Court basically overruled the state law and said they were allowed to be married.
Okay. Lots of people want to jump into our conversation. This is great. So again, listeners, if you want recommendations or if you want to give recommendations for books on our Summer Sunny 2020 Summer Book Show, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange at nhpr.org. And Karen's calling in from Plainfield. Hey, Karen, you're on the air. Welcome.
Welcome. Oh, hi. Thanks for letting me call in.
Sure.
I want to recommend two books that aren't particularly new, but they're excellent. One is Being Mortal, M-O-R-T-A-L, by Atul Gawande. And the other one is Five Smooth Stones. And I don't remember the author, but I remember that book since I was 17.
And Karen, you're going to have to say that second title again, something stones, because I didn't catch it.
Yeah, Five Smooth Stones.
Very good.
S-M-O-O-T-H.
Okay. Karen, thank you very much for calling in. Again, that was Smooth Stones, if listeners didn't catch it. Thank you for those recommendations, Karen. And all the recommendations will be put on our website a little bit later today. Sue is also calling in. Hi, Sue. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. Taking my call. This is Sue from Bradford. What I'm struck with in all the conversations that are happening that I've been able to listen to, I'm in the car, so I may have missed some, is that we seem to be avoiding the word white. When you're talking about why are these books so jumping off the shelves right now, because people want to learn about racism. White people want to learn about racism. Black people don't. And we seem to avoid using the word white. And I'm curious about its avoidance. So that's my comment.
Well, Sue, thank you for jumping in. And I'm going to turn to you first, Jasmine, but want to hear from everybody on this. Go ahead, Jasmine.
Hello?
Jasmine, are you there? What do you think?
What's the question?
Oh, basically, Sue was kind of saying, you know, taking me to task a little bit, which is perfectly legit, saying, why do we keep saying, quote unquote, people want to get up to speed on racism? Sue is saying, call it like it is, white people want to or need to get up to speed about racism. So she was kind of saying, you know, that's the way it is, and let's not sort of pretend that it isn't. And I just wonder what you think, Jasmine.
Well, I kind of disagree with that sentiment. We do have a lot of Black and other minority customers coming in buying these books. They also want to learn. Ibram X. Kendi, he speaks about in his books how he had to educate himself on race because his own perceptions were wrong about what race was and racism. He assumed, you know, that he wasn't racist because he was Black, but after he started his research, he realized, oh wait, no, I am racist as well. I don't think it's just a white people looking for redemption. I think it's everybody just trying to figure out how to get together better. In the end.
Wow, really interesting. Sue, thank you for calling. And I wanted to share a couple emails because a bunch have come in from our listeners, and that's just great. Mark emails, I had to pause my reading of Jill Lepore's excellent These Truths, A History of the United States, because I was getting so depressed by the relentlessly negative history that we're not taught. Mark says, I will resume reading it after I finish Rutger Bregman's Humankind, A Hopeful History, which has been giving me hope. Next on my list is My Grandmother's Hands by Resma Menankem. Mark, thank you very much. And nice to hear that you're reading a book that has been giving you hope these days. That's great. Alice recommends The Warmth of Other Suns by Isabel Wilkerson, a historical account of the Great Migration. She calls it an eye-opening account. That is great. And Bill in Concord says, I'm a sci-fi fiend. I cannot get enough of it, and I'm always on the lookout for new authors. Sci-fi authors tend to be white males. I did find some great new series by N.K. Jemisin, a woman of color and winner of numerous Hugo and Nebula Awards. The Broken Earth series is particularly good. Ms. Jemisin brings an interesting perspective to her other worlds as both a woman and a woman of color. That's great, Bill. I have heard of N.K. Jemisin, although I don't think I've read any of her books. But Bill wants to know, are there other sci-fi writers of color that your guests could recommend? And Michael, I'm going to throw that one to you first.
Well, first, let me just say that N.K. Jemisin's City We Became is on a lot of summer reading lists for this summer. It's a great sort of Neil Gaiman-esque kind of fantasy. And I read it. I enjoyed it a lot. Especially the voice of the villain, which just gave me chills. And I'm kind of an experienced reader, so when I get chills, I know it's good. Another one that is good this year, and I think it just won a Hugo, is This Is How You Lose the Time War. It's an epistolary science fiction novel by Amal El-Motar and Max Gladstone. So it's a woman and a man writing together in two voices, in the voices of two agents, Red and Blue, who they travel back and forth through time, altering history of multiple universes. Their respective empires are at war with each other. But then over time, they leave each other's secret messages and they gradually fall in love. So it's a novella. So that's a lot to be packed into a short work of fiction. And that's really good.
Well, I'm glad we're talking about fiction because that's definitely an important part of this piece too. So thank you so much for those emails, and we'll take more emails after a very short break. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call like Karen and Sue did. We'd love to hear from you. Our number 1-800-892-6477. Again, our email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook, you can use Twitter, and we'll be back in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's our summer reading show, the 2020 edition, with an eye toward books from diverse authors. What's on your reading list, or what kind of book are you looking for? Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org, comment on Facebook, or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter, Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, and Jasmine Brooks, assistant manager of the Bookery in Manchester. And as I've been saying, any book that comes up this hour, along with our guest recommendations, will be put on our website later today. It's a great resource for you. Check it out at nhpr.org/exchange. Lots of calls and emails coming in, all of you. And Michelle in Hudson wrote, written a while ago and for teens, but I just discovered this and couldn't put it down, Michelle says. Freak the Mighty by Rodman Philbrick is a story of two differently abled boys, one tiny and sickly but brilliant, the other is strong and giant and compassionate but not so brilliant. They team up to be unstoppable. Tearjerker, heartwarming, worth the read. Thank you for the email. Lynn also emailed to say, Gibson's by mail order was my source for Carolyn Shute's new issues-oriented but entertaining novel, The Recipe for Revolution. Readers may remember her book For the Beans of Egypt, Maine. The novel is laced with the turmoil of conflicting viewpoints. Good escapism for right now, Lynn says. I highly recommend this new Shute novel. And Lynn, thank you. Here's one more recommendation from Kathy in Concord. An incredible book I just read is The Street by Anne Petrie. The Black author wrote this in the 80s. The story takes place in Harlem and follows a Black woman who was recently separated from her husband and their young son. It is set in the 50s and is incredibly powerful in the telling of a Black woman and child and the devastating choices and lack of choices for this woman. So that's The Street by Anne Petrie, recommended by Kathy in Concord. Thanks to everybody who took the time to write in, and let's take some more calls. Reeve is calling in from Wolfboro. Hi, Reeve, you're on the air. Reeve in Wolfboro, are you with us? Go ahead.
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Reeve.
Okay, great. You mentioned N.K. Jemisin before, but neglected the caller who called in neglected to mention that there is a new book by N.K. Jemisin called How Long Till Black Future Month. And unlike the others, this is her short stories. They are incredible. The visual on the cover is worth the purchase alone, but it's a really great book. And then the other, and again, she's a Black author with a really bold perception of what possibility might be. the other book I wanted to recommend is by Nina McLaughlin, and it is called Wake Siren. It's not about racism, but I think that changing our minds is so tricky to do. And this is these are also short stories about all of the classics told from the woman's point of view, the women who were raped, the women who were left behind, and so forth. And it's bold, it's funny, it's harsh, it's strong. So to get that perspective of what the underreported were feeling and went through, I think that's kind of fascinating reading, too.
Well, Reeve, it's always good to hear from you. Thank you for calling in and making those recommendations. And it sounds like there'll be a rediscovery of N.K. Jemisin after the show. That's great. And Sarah in Pittsfield, go ahead. You're on the air. Thank you for calling into The Exchange today.
Yes, I was recommending two books by Stephen Kinzer. One of them is Poisoner in Chief, and it's about the CIA search for mind control and a lot of the different things the CIA has done, testing drugs and everything on the American public. The other book that I recommended was Overthrow, and it is a book about the last 100 years of United States overthrowing foreign governments. You know, we're accusing all these different countries of all these different things, and we're doing them ourselves.
Well, Sarah, it's good to hear from you, too, and thank you for calling in today. And so many recommendations from our listeners. Here's one that I know is on at least two of your lists. This listener writes in, Peg in Exeter recommends Orhan's Inheritance by Aline Ohansian. I hope I'm saying that right. Meshing the atrocities of the Armenian Genocide of 1915 and the Lack of Awareness by Modern Turkish Citizens. Peg says, I was struck how the book's final chapters resonate with Black Lives Matter. That's interesting, Peg. Peg also recommends what she calls Growing Up White by Debbie Irving, a book that shares a WASP's journey as she realizes her privilege growing up. Our church, Peg says, is doing an adult series on this book right now as a book group. I think it's Waking Up White. And I think, Michael Herman, it's on your book list. And Debbie Irving is a local author. So go ahead, Michael.
Yep, she is local. And the listeners described it very well. The reason I wasn't going to bring it up was it's gone out of stock at the publisher temporarily.
So, oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of book clubs reading that. Actually, it's been very popular with book clubs in Concord for the last few years.
Okay. And Jasmine, a couple other fiction books from your list that I've seen on a lot of the other lists out there for summer 2020. I want to ask you about one of them, and that's Conjure Women, Jasmine. Just give us a little taste of that, because that seems to be getting a lot of attention.
Yeah, so that book is quite interesting. It's a book about women and as slaves before and after the Civil War. These women are healers and taking care of their families and how that connects with slavery and then sudden freedom.
There's another one, too, on your list, Jasmine, that I'd love just a little taste of, Mexican Gothic. What is that one about, and why is that on your list, Jasmine?
So that one is, thought for diverse authors would be a good one because we don't have a lot of Latinx representation on some of our lists. And so this one's about Mexico, essentially. It's not set in America so much, but it's about women and finding their voice and fighting patriarchy, essentially.
Go ahead, Jasmine. I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's kind of a women's, voices in the Latinx community.
You know, another fiction book that was on a bunch of the lists that I looked at yesterday and that is on your list, Dan Chartrand, in addition to N.K. Jemisin, by the way, who's come up a lot this morning, The Nickel Boys, a novel by Colson Whitehead. Dan is on your list and a bunch of other lists. And I know in the past we've talked about The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead, which I have read and was chilling, excellent, but chilling. What about this new one by Colson Whitehead, The Nickel Boys? Just give us a little preview of that, Dan, if you could, please.
Yeah, actually, that book just released in paperback, and this is his latest. It's it tells this story in the novel form of young Black men who were abused by the state of Florida. They were institutionalized. They were killed. They were buried in unmarked graves. He's telling the story of one of the young men, Elwood Curtis, who was sent to this school after being picked up for hitchhiking. This story will break your heart and infuriate you as well. Another novel that is on my list is in answer to Bill from Concord. He should check out Black Leopard, Red Wolf by Marlon James. It is book one of the Dark Star trilogy. Marlon James is a Black author who divides his time between New York and Minnesota. And Neil Gaiman called this book as well realized as anything Tolkien made. So definitely worth Bill and Concord's attention. Black Leopard, Red Wolf.
Okay. To Bill's question about, Black authors loving science fiction, that's another one along with N.K. Jemisin. Great. Well, let's go back to our listeners. And Ken emailed, he'd be reading, this is not fiction, he'd be reading The Room Where It Happened by John Bolton, and also Dark Mirror, Edward Snowden, and the Surveillance State. So Ken's going to be reading some political books this summer. Also, Eleanor from Dover wrote in recommending fiction. She says she's hoping that readers will engage with issues of race during the summer. She recommends one that my kids read and reread, The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. Eleanor says it's technically a young adult novel, but a great book for older readers as well, and especially relevant as it handles one teenager's experience after the death of one of her friends at the hands of police. And that's The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. And I might ask you guys about that in just a moment, but I want to read the two others that Eleanor from Dover wrote into about. The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison. Eleanor says it's a classic about the ways racism affect the self-image and self-worth of even young people and shapes the experiences and lives of so many people. And then the third one Eleanor recommends, Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe, not focused on America, but an incredibly powerful portrayal of the devastating impacts of race and colonialism on individuals, communities, and cultures. Wow, Eleanor, thank you so much for joining us. And Jasmine, can you just tell listeners a little bit about what The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas is about? Because this was really big a couple years ago and very popular still.
The Hate U Give, I don't have a synopsis of that. I haven't read it myself. Perhaps one of the other booksellers might have a better idea of what that message is.
No, absolutely. And it was really big a couple of years ago. So I really appreciate what you're saying, because there's so many books, you just can't keep track of all of them. How about you, Michael? The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. I know this was a big seller at your store.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's only still in hardcover, which means it's really selling really well after a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a 16-year-old girl named Star who lives in a poor neighborhood, but she goes to a fancy prep school. And a childhood friend of hers is killed by a police officer. And there's a big controversy over it. Her childhood friend is called a thug or a drug dealer. And there's, everybody tries to get to the bottom of that story. And the only one who has the answer is the protagonist, Star. And she's in danger. So it's an exciting book. It's a YA. It's probably, I would say, older YA and crossover into the adult audience as well.
Sure. And Jasmine, you've got a couple of young adult books on your list. One that I did want to ask you about, Jasmine, because I saw it repeated on other lists around the, not just among our guests, but around the country. Clap When You Land. It's a little bit creepy, but it sounds good. So just give us a little bit on that one, Jasmine, please.
Yeah, so this one's kind of an interesting take on siblings. So essentially the father, there's a father of two girls who don't know about each other. One lives in Camino Rios, and he visits her every summer in the Dominican Republic. But he also has a family in New York City, so he kind of travels back and forth. The two girls don't know about each other until he dies in a plane crash. And it's kind of, they suddenly find out about each other, and they have to reconcile their two very different lives and come together in their grief.
Wow. So their dad dies. The dad has two daughters, one in New York, one in the Dominican Republic. He dies in a plane crash. And then these daughters find out about each other.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, one more call I'll try and squeeze in here. And Annette is calling in from Dunbarton. Annette, it's good to have you on the air with us today. Go ahead.
Yes. I have two books I wanted to recommend. One that really kind of impacts even the way I think today. It's called Kindred. It's by Octavia E. Butler. I saw this book. I was in the airport, and I was like, "Wow, let me see this book." And I bought it, and I couldn't put it down.
Wow.
But anyway, the second one is it's just a history type of book. It has 1,001 things everyone should know about African American history, and it covers the Great Migration, civil rights, and politics. African Americans in the military, culture, religion, invention, science, and medicine, and of course, sports. And it's a nice, handy book just to see some of the things that we have done up to that period, of course. So just wanted to share that with you.
Well, Annette, I appreciate Yeah, I appreciate you sharing and calling in. And I want to let listeners who shared recommendations that I haven't had time to read, because there have been so many, don't worry, we will put them on that web post a little bit later today. Again, it's nhpr.org/exchange. Just a couple more to put out there, though, now on the air. Elizabeth in Merrimack says, in the interest of exposing my three boys, age 11, 9, and 5, to more diverse and honest historical narratives, Elizabeth says, I picked up the book Heart and Soul, The Story of America and African Americans by Kadir Nelson. It's told from the perspective of the grandson of a runaway slave that covers his kidnapping from Africa through the death of Martin Luther King. Elizabeth says, the artwork is gorgeous, the story is heartbreaking, and my kids are devouring it, in all capital letters there from Elizabeth. Elizabeth, thank you so much for writing in. Thanks, everybody who wrote in. And I want to thank our guests, too, this morning. Jasmine Brooks, it was really great to have you. I hope to talk to you again. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
That's Jasmine Brooks, assistant manager of the Bookery in Manchester, and Dan Chartrand. Nice to talk to you, too. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Laura.
That's Dan Chartrand. He's owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. And Michael Harmon, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura. Always great to be with you.
Michael Harmon is owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. One more time, you can find all the books that came up this hour from our guests, from our listeners, emails, Facebook calls, and so forth on our website a little bit later today. It takes us a little while to put it all together. It's nhpr.org/exchange. And again, it's a nice resource for you as you put together your own summer reading list. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.